From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Catholics and science. It's a rather controversial topic these days, as many people think that the Church is opposed to all scientific progress and that there's a war between science and belief, between faith and reason. This week on Register Radio, we confront the myth with Dr. Stephen Barr, president of the Society of Catholic Scientists. And then, a YouTube star has entered the Church. We hear the story of hope and conversion with Lizzie Rizé. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, is off this week. Well, a recent gathering in Washington, D.C. brought together hundreds of Catholic scientists from around the world for the second annual conference of the Society of Catholic Scientists. While the topics under discussion were rather technical, to say the least, anyone can understand the deeper message. There is a profound, historical, and very relevant relationship between science and the Church, and Catholic scientists prove that every day. I had the chance to speak with Dr. Stephen Barr, president of the Society, about the conference and the real relationship between the Church and science. It's exciting to be able to bring together scientists around the world to talk about what are topics that the average person probably doesn't understand or really has never really had a chance to study themselves. But it's even more exciting to bring together Catholic scientists. And I know you're president of the Society of Catholic Scientists. Tell us a little bit first about the organization and how you got started, because I think that's important for people to appreciate.
Yes, well, it started 2 years ago, and it was the brainchild of a group of us, a small group of six of us. And a lot of people, you know, this is something that should have been done a long time ago, because many Catholics in the academic world or in the scientific world, they often feel somewhat isolated. Sometimes Catholics keep their heads low and don't advertise vigorously that they are Catholics. So many Catholics don't realize how many other Catholics there are in science, for example, and they can feel isolated. So this is to bring, first of all, fellowship among Catholic scientists. So Catholic scientists can meet each other, know of each other's existence, and form a community and have intellectual and spiritual fellowship with each other. But it's also to witness to the world that there are a large number of Catholic scientists out there joining forces and meeting each other and giving witness.
Yes, exactly. And I was fascinated to read that almost immediately after the founding, in the first year, your society grew to over 500 members.
And we haven't even really started to recruit in Europe, but we have members from around the world.
Well, one of the obvious questions that any Catholic scientist is asked is, what is it like to be a Catholic and a scientist? Because for a lot of people in today's culture, they seem almost impossible to reconcile.
Well, if you talk to actually Catholic scientists, they often find that puzzling. I'm often asked, how do you, quote, reconcile being a scientist and a Catholic? Do I find it difficult to be both? And I think many Catholic scientists find that a kind of strange question, because we really feel it's the same. Many of the same things that make us Catholic make us scientists: a sense of wonder about the world, a sense that everything holds together in some way. It's not that there's a conflict. Really, there's a deep harmony. That there's an ultimate answer to things. There's an ultimate explanation to things. And so the ultimate explanation to things is God.
Mm-hmm. And that relationship then between faith and science, between faith and reason, seems to undergird so much of what this society is trying to accomplish. But you're also very professionally oriented in terms of the craft of science, aren't you?
Right. We have pretty high membership criteria. We have student members who are, you know, grad students or undergraduate science majors. And so it's pretty tough membership requirements. And nevertheless, we're growing we're getting very large numbers of people joining.
Mm-hmm. Now, for yourself, the experience of science, talk about the wonder of it for you, how you became involved, and what it also means to you personally to be a Catholic scientist.
Well, you know, I've been a science type guy, you know, one of these guess people would have called me a math science nerd when I was a little kid. So I've known since I was very small that math and science were the way I was going to go. It was never a choice for me. And it's like that for many people in science, not everybody. But, you know, I, as I said, it's a desire to understand the world. You know, that's what drives most scientists. They want to understand how things hold together. They want to, they believe that the world makes sense, and they want to understand how it makes sense.
Right. So here we are gathered in Washington, D.C., for a couple of conferences. You've just finished a conference with the Thomistic Institute. What was that?
Right.
What was that on?
This Thomistic Institute symposium is studying the relation of the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas to modern science. And it's been a very exciting symposium. A lot of young people here, grad students, postdocs, advanced undergrads. I'm very impressed at the intelligence and knowledge that these scholars have. Really a lot of excitement here. There are about 50 or 60 of these young people here and listening to the lectures and get involved in very lively discussions. I should also say that our Society of Catholic Scientists meetings are also filled with enthusiasm and excitement because a lot of Catholic scientists are excited to be with other Catholic scientists. It's not with a large number of them. It's not an experience they've had many times in their life. It's sort of like putting a fish into water for the first time. You know, they finally meet up with lots of other Catholic scientists who are on the same wavelength, so we say, with them.
Yeah. Now, you had your first 2017 conference for the Society of Catholic Scientists last year, and it was under the theme of origins. Is that right?
Correct.
So what were you hoping to accomplish with that first one? It must have been a lot of fun to try to put that together.
Yes, and we had a lot. The talks were excellent. And by the way, people can watch all of the talks from that first conference on the website of the Society of Catholic Scientists. So we talked about, the talks were about the origin of the universe, created it, from a physics point of view, how the universe began, the origin and evolution of life, and origin of human language, various theories about how human language began. So it was very fundamental questions and really good presentations. Our conference this year is largely devoted to studying the human mind and exploring these arguments that we're just, you know, material beings without a soul.
Yeah, I was reading through a number of the presentations, including yours, on the role of the observer in quantum mechanics.
Right.
These are pretty heady topics for the average person.
They are, though the talks are meant to be, see, since our membership spans a wide range from biologists, physicists, you know, earth scientists, and so on, the talks are not given at a super technical level, most of them. We strive to have them fairly accessible.
Right. Well, and I noticed, too, that you have a presentation on integral ecology as a restoration of man's proper role in creation. So this ties directly into even what Pope Francis has certainly been talking about with something like an encyclical like Laudato Si. And that raises the question of that. We've talked about the relationship of faith and reason of being a Catholic and a scientist, but it's important, too, to note, isn't it, the participation and role of Catholic scientists in the church, especially today in this very high technologically oriented era, to contribute to the wisdom and understanding of the church on these issues, to be able to speak wisely and prudently on them.
Right. In fact, to some extent, our organization, Society of Catholic Scientists, is, you could think of it as a response to a call that was made by St. John Paul II back in early days of his pontificate. He made a statement in one of his speeches that it would be good for Catholics who were scientists and theologians to help their brethren the findings of science and the teachings of the church in their own intellectual lives, that they're struggling to integrate these. And so he called upon Catholic scientists to provide this sort of service to their brethren to help them sort these things through. And so I think that that's one of the reasons we founded this society. It's not just so we can have fellowship with each other. It's also so that we can help others understand the harmony between science and faith.
Yeah, and is there, too, an important role that you as scientists, as experts in all fields of science, as you note, the 750 members, for Catholics not to be afraid of the sciences?
Absolutely. The more we learn about nature, the more it shows forth the splendor of God, but also the more that we learn about nature, the long run, what it's doing is supporting many of the things we believe as Catholics.
Yeah, exactly. And the role of scientists, Catholic scientists in history, is also something that's worth celebrating, isn't it?
It's actually amazing. Well, first of all, that people should understand, and this is not widely appreciated, most of the great scientists from the time of Galileo and earlier devoutly religious, and many scientists today are religious, as our organization hopes to show people. But it's not just that. The Catholic priests have made enormous contributions in the history of science. The Big Bang Theory, it's not known to many people, the Big Bang Theory was George Lemaître, who was also a Catholic priest. And the science of genetics was started by a Catholic priest, Gregor Mendel. But there's a long list of such things. Geology, really, the science of geology was started by Nicholas Steno, who became a priest and a bishop, and was in fact beatified, Pope John Paul II. And I can give you many more examples, but it's an astonishing record of priests making major contributions. The first asteroid was discovered by a Catholic priest. I could go on and on.
Yeah. For people who'd like a lot more information about the society, how they can support it, and perhaps even how they can join it, where should they go?
Well, it's very easy. I can give you the website. It's www.catholicscientists.org. But if you just Google Catholic and scientists, we're going to pop up, probably the first or second thing on the screen.
All right. That's catholicscientists.org. Well, Dr. Barr, I'm grateful again, and I pray that your conference is a huge success.
Yes, and I hope all your listeners pray for us, too.
Well, that was my conversation with Dr. Stephen Barr, president of the Society of Catholic Scientists. For more information about the Society, go to catholicscientists.org. Well, when we come back, I talk to YouTube star Lizzie Rizé about her conversion to Catholicism, the role of social media in evangelization, and what millennials are looking for in their faith lives. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter, and I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
I literally am about to start crying thinking of how hard it was to have to tell my parents that I'm becoming Catholic. A lot of people have been pushing me to come out about this because people have suspected, and the reason I haven't wanted to is because my YouTube channel is public. Everyone in my personal life knows about it, and I don't want all these people from my college or from my churches growing up who poured into me spiritually to know this, because it comes across as betrayal. I did not want to convert, but I believe that it is true meaning that it is the early church, the apostolic church, that it goes by the Bible more than any other type of Christianity. I just wanted to find truth, whatever it was. So I researched myself into this. Since last February, I've just been obsessively reading and researching, just researching so much into what Christianity actually was in the early church.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor of the National Catholic Register. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief, is off this week. Well, you were just listening to Lizzie Rizet, who's a very popular 23-year-old. Her YouTube channel, Lizzie Answers, started when she was only 15, has more than 200,000 subscribers, and her 400 videos have been viewed more than 35 million times. She has a huge following on Twitter and Instagram, and as we just heard, she's also a recent Catholic convert. Lizzie entered the church last Easter after a remarkable journey, and she has a lot to say about her conversion, the role of social media in evangelization, and how to talk to millennials. I spoke with her during her visit to Washington, D.C. just recently. Well, Lizzie, welcome.
Thank you.
And I should also add welcome as well to the Catholic Church.
Thank you so much.
First, what have the last few months been like since you entered?
It's been really chaotic. I had no idea I would get so much attention from the Catholic world. I actually thought I would lose a lot of subscribers who are Protestant, and so instead the opposite happened. So it was very overwhelming at first, but I think it's been amazing getting to read so many messages from people who are also converts or who are looking into Catholicism for the first time, and I think I've gained a lot of new followers who just found out about my story. A lot of my subscribers were praying for me to convert, like, for several years, because I've been making videos kind of teasing Catholicism and talking more about church history. So some people have been praying for me for a year and a half, 2 years to become Catholic. And so finally saying that I'd been in an RCIA for 8 months and was coming in at Easter, everyone was just so excited and felt like they were part of my story. I grew up in Churches of Christ, and my parents were actually missionaries in Russia. So I lived there for the first few years of my life, and we were really, really involved in church growing up. I went to a Church of Christ university, and I took a lot of religion classes there.
So how did you end up then what I think we can safely describe as a YouTube celebrity?
So I went to an arts high school, and I did film and creative writing and debate. So one summer, I just started a YouTube channel, and I just shared my ideas on a lot of different issues. And so I've been doing it since I was 15. Now I'm about to turn 24. So just through the years, I've gained a lot of followers, and I kept it up all throughout school. It was, like, really hard because editing takes so long, but it's something I'm really passionate about.
Do you remember what your first post was?
Yeah, I think my first video, it was an introduction to my channel, and it's so awkward watching those videos because I was so young and I wasn't comfortable in front of the camera.
How old were you at the time?
I was 15, about to turn 16.
Okay. So. It might be a surprise to people that YouTube has been around that long.
Yeah.
So you had this very first post, and when did you realize that not only that this was fun, but actually that people were starting to watch your channel?
I think it took a couple years to really take off. I think by the end of when I was in high school, I had around 10,000 subscribers. But it's always been about connecting with my individual subscribers. I spend hours every week reading through messages, replying to individual people. And I started my channel by just making videos based upon the questions I would get. So it's always been very personal with my subscribers.
So what sort of questions do you or were you starting to get as you grew in popularity and sort of how does that contrast to what you're getting now?
Yeah. So I would get a lot of people asking for relationship advice because I had kind of a teenage demographic. So a lot of my earlier videos have to do with that. But I've always intertwined Christianity and everything I've talked about because I think the way to help my subscribers the most is to show them God. And then as my mental illness came out in college, I began to talk more about bipolar disorder and depression, and I've been making very specific theology videos within the past couple of years, kind of following my journey.
Mm-hmm. And your social media presence is pretty significant. What other platforms are you on for social media?
So I have Instagram and Twitter with my name, Lizzie Rizet, and then I also have a Facebook page with my same name.
So here you are on, you're growing your YouTube channel, and at sort of running parallel to that, you're undergoing a spiritual journey yourself.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your first sort of serious encounter with Catholicism was?
I think It was kind of through my YouTube channel because a lot of my subscribers were Catholic, even from when I was in high school. And so they would tell me things of how Protestants would kind of discriminate against them and like say they weren't Christians. But then when I got to college, I befriended some Catholics in the philosophy department. And what really got me to start researching in is that people were converting into Catholicism from Protestantism, from Church of Christ. It was just a trend going on in the philosophy department. And so it really was strange to me because growing up, there were a lot of Catholic there were a lot of Catholics who had converted into Church of Christ.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it was always like Catholics become Protestant, become more Christian, but the opposite was happening. And two of my professors at Pepperdine were also Catholic converts, and they really, really impacted my decision to research in. I had so much negative energy, hatred even, towards Catholicism because I saw it as just tarnishing and ruining and changing what Jesus had created. I saw it as a less pure form of Christianity. Like, I saw the priests and all the tradition as like blocking you from having a relationship with God. So I just felt like I couldn't have a chill conversation about it. So I didn't ask at all. So I would be friends with these Catholics and these Catholic converts, and I went to Mass with them a couple times, but we never had intense discussions about it.
Well, there's an old saying that if you study the history of Christianity, you inevitably become Catholic.
Yeah.
It sounds as though something similar happened to you.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because I took about 15 classes on Christianity at my undergrad, but we really didn't go into church history, even in our church history classes. So when I started reading about the church fathers and learning about Ignatius and Polycarp and Irenaeus, all these people, I'd never even heard of their names before. And after taking so many classes on religion, I thought I knew so much about Christianity. So that really kind of put me over the edge because I realized I know nothing about church history.
You must have felt a little bit deprived even.
Yeah, I was angry. I felt like core parts of the faith had been kept from me my entire life. I was so angry at my family and the church I grew up in. It was such strong emotions during that time.
Mm-hmm. So you said that your YouTube followers had been praying for you, hoping that you'd come in. They obviously had a clue where you were already heading.
It was wild. Even in 2016, I was receiving comments saying, "You're a future Catholic. Welcome home in advance." And I was honestly so confused because I didn't think any of my beliefs fit Catholic theology. But I was getting all these comments, and I even made jokes with like my mom. I'd be like, "Look at these comments. They're saying I'm going to become Catholic." So funny. But I think that people who have converted in can see a convert from so far away.
So there came that day then where you realized, I have to do this.
Yeah. It was actually the night before Easter 2017, and I read through all the communion accounts, and I read through John 6, and I started crying because I'd been reading the church fathers talking about real presence, but then reading through the actual accounts, and especially the Bread of Life discourse in John 6, it's just so obvious. Jesus repeats it several times. The Greek is gnawing, chewing. It's there. It's scripture.
You know, I think you've done a better job of research, researching the faith than a lot of Catholics have. So here you were this Easter of 2017, and what was the next step then? I mean, who did you tell first?
I messaged my Catholic friends from Pepperdine, and I told them that I knew I would become either Orthodox or Catholic, but I said I wasn't going to convert for 3 or 4 years. I was going to push it back.
Well, that didn't happen, did it?
Yeah. My plan was to go to Thailand and to pretend to be Protestant. I even had conversations with my best friends of how I could hide it and not read in. I even had certain books that I knew, like, I'm not going to read that until I really want to convert, like Stephen Ray's book. But eventually, the Thai church didn't want me to come. And so then I was at this point where I was like, okay, I guess I'll just go right into RCIA.
Yeah. How was that experience?
It was amazing finally getting to convert in and knowing that I was closer and closer to taking communion because that was the hardest part. I went to Mass every week for a year and I wasn't able to take Eucharist. And I would cry every time at the miracle because I had previously thought transubstantiation was crazy, and finally believing in it and knowing that Jesus died to give us this sacrament, it was just amazing experiencing that every week.
We live today in an age of secularism, of doubt. That's especially true among millennials who seem farther and farther away from Christianity in particular. What's your experience of that, and what advice do you give to reaching out to millennials and to millennials themselves?
I think that Christian millennials, it's our job to befriend people who are not Christian and show them God. All of my roommates are not Christian. A lot of my closest friends, a lot of my subscribers are atheist and agnostic, and they say they're not religious at all, but they just find my videos interesting. I actually met up with one of my subscribers 2 days ago who's been following me for 6 years, and she said she became Christian because of my videos and then became Catholic herself and began praying for me to become Catholic. So I think that with evangelism, what I do on my YouTube is I never went on trying to be a Christian YouTuber. I just incorporate it into every type of video. So I'm just being myself, but God is a part of that. So that's how I kind of organically incorporate it into my YouTube and into all the relationships in my life.
Do you find that millennials react better to that than the sort of classic or traditional form of evangelization?
Yeah. A lot of people who watch my videos don't go to church, are not interested in going to church, have this spiritual, not religious attitude. Mm-hmm. And so they'll watch my videos, and I encourage in my videos for people to become a part of the church and to not see religion as a negative thing. So I think it's a great way to reach out to people.
And finally, for any millennial who's listening or reading your story,
yeah,
what advice do you give them?
I encourage everyone to just research into the church history and to learn as much as possible. I think that our generation, people who are like new atheists, they are not researching into the historicity of Christ or the Greco-Roman culture. They're not researching into church history. They're being led by these horrible, like, relativistic arguments away from truth. And so I think that we just need to read and read and read and do really deep research. And what I really hate about a lot of the new atheists like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens is they don't have degrees in theology, in biblical interpretation. They studied something completely different than that, but then we're looking to them as these experts in religion. So my advice for other millennials is to read people who are experts in the field. They don't even have to be Christians. They can be atheists, but people who are experts in the field of biblical interpretation, Greco-Roman culture, Second Temple Judaism. Read experts and read and read and read.
That's perfect. Well, Lizzie Rizet, thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Lizzie Rizet, and I give her our assurance that she is in our prayers, especially going forward. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. You can also go there to hear our podcasts and follow the Register on Twitter at ncregister. Thanks for joining me on Register Radio here on EWTN. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, our producer Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, take care and God bless.